Great. Good morning, and thank you. So I'm going to present additional findings from the hospital violence surveillance study that Ashley Shanefish just presented on, and I'm going to focus on contextual factors of what gets reported as workplace violence. And again, our study focuses specifically on type 2 violence, where the patient or visitor is the perpetrator. And so I'm going to harp on how things haven't changed. Back in 2001, so almost 15 years ago, leading workplace violence researchers published a series of articles summarizing their recommendations regarding the next steps in non-fatal workplace violence research. And at the top of that list was a recommendation to improve surveillance efforts, that coordinated surveillance efforts of non-fatal workplace violence was needed, particularly to capture data to create evidence-based prevention strategies or policies and programs. And so one of the goals of this study was to improve the reporting and capturing of workplace violent events in the hospital setting, including the context of these events, to inform prevention strategies. So again, this study is taking place in two large healthcare systems and two separate cities, two separate states. This has been a collaborative effort between academic researchers and hospital stakeholders, so it's been a really nice collaboration. Again, this is going on at six hospitals, two level three medical centers, and four community hospitals. And we have about 11,000 workers that were eligible to participate so far. And a worker was eligible to participate if they were likely to interact with patients and or visitors as part of their job. So they could be in housekeeping, food service, nursing, medicine, et cetera. So we conducted a baseline assessment of type 2 violence and the reporting of these events. And before we started this baseline assessment, we actually did quite a bit of homework on how we defined workplace violence. We did a huge literature search, which we've published, but we really found that there was some consistency with how type 2 violence has been reported with subcategories of physical assault, physical threat, and verbal abuse. So we took these definitions and we pilot tested them further among our frontline workers at one of the study hospitals, and then we refined it, and this is what we used. And I have some fancy thing in here that I don't know how got in here. Okay, so we did a baseline assessment. We reviewed existing hospital injury surveillance data. We conducted the Blitz survey that Ashley was telling you about, and we did focus groups and key informant interviews. And this is our hospital surveillance system that's at Duke University. And so actually, Ashley led this effort in which she went in and reviewed. She took the OSHA log data, workers' compensation data, and then the safety reporting system, which is where any safety issue can be reported by workers into this system. It doesn't have to be particularly workplace violence, and it doesn't have to be an injury, but it can be anything that they're concerned about. And it was tied to human resources data. And what we found was over a six-year time period, 484 events were captured, and 82% of these came from workers' compensation, and all were patient-perpetrated events. So we're assuming that these were capturing the more serious events, and they did not capture anything that was visitor-related. So we developed this Blitz survey, and we called it a Blitz because we wanted it to be quick, and it was. It took less than 5 minutes to complete. It was voluntary. It was anonymous. It was available online or paper, and it was available in English and in Spanish. And so we asked workers to provide a career and 12-month prevalence of violence based on our study definitions. And if they had more than one event, or if they only had one event, for them to provide details about that event. So if they had more than one, we asked them about the one that they deemed to be the most serious. And then we also asked them about the reporting of that event and where they reported, and if they didn't, why not. And we conducted a large number of focus groups and key informant interviews across several different occupational groups. And then we recorded those groups, those discussions, transcribed them into text, and analyzed them in vivo. And so the main themes regarding reporting that came up in the focus groups, we asked about where they report, the mechanisms for reporting, their motivation and threshold for reporting, their knowledge of hospital policies, and the factors that foster reporting, that would foster future reporting. And so we had a response rate of 49%. We had almost 5,400 workers respond. They had a career prevalence of 50% of any one form of type 2 violence, with a 12-month prevalence of 39%. So, of course, none of this is new. It's we've seen this before in prior studies. We asked workers about the number of times they had been victim of violence in the previous 12 months in the form of violence. Almost 1,200 had been physically assaulted, 2,200 had been physically threatened, and almost 57 had received some form of verbal abuse. And so for those who had at least one event, when we asked them to select the one that they felt was the most serious, 19% were categorized as physical assault as well as physical threat, and then 62% were verbal abuse. And so, as seen before, that the visitor, or excuse me, the patient was more likely to be the perpetrator relative to the visitor. And these are our work groups that reported at least one event, and it, with half being nurses, 12% patient technicians and therapists, 12% were aides and sitters. But we had a lot of administrative staff and also individuals who worked in billing. So when they handled the insurance bills and the admissions and discharge and the paperwork, that they were on the receiving end of quite a bit. And so moving on to the reporting, as Ashley already indicated, 75% of our workers indicated that they reported events, where 25% indicated they did not. And this was already covered as to why they didn't report the events. And we heard this a lot that was really reinforced in our focus groups. And one worker indicated, I'm not going to report some little old lady who hits me in the face because she has Alzheimer's. Or another indicated, if it's a psych patient and they don't know what they're saying, or an older person with dementia, we don't report that because it's based on their condition. Okay, so the patient's status really seemed to be a strong influence on their reporting, but also a level of tolerance. If somebody comes into triage and calls me a bitch or something, I don't know if I would report that because it happens a lot. And another, if we tried to do something formal with regard to reporting for every event, it would be too time-consuming. So I appreciated their honesty because we were asking them when we move forward, what's the threshold? When are you going to report? And a lot of them were like, listen, if this is really going to take me a lot of time, I'm not going to go do it. Oops. So, again, we had 75% did report. We found that those who were physically assaulted or physically threatened were more likely to report than those who had experienced a verbal threat. I don't want to minimize, though, the seriousness, though, of some of the verbal threats that some of these workers received. Some of them were really serious, and the workers reported that they were scared and frightened. We found that being scared or worried about their personal safety at work after these events did influence reporting. They were more likely to report, as well as those who felt that the perpetrator either intended to harm them or they weren't quite sure if the perpetrator intended to harm, relative to those that felt that the perpetrator was not intending to harm them. When we asked where they reported, 16% went into the medical records, and 58% were verbally reporting to a coworker or manager or to security. And of those, the 2,098 events, 16% security was actually called. And only 26% went into some formal written reporting system. So if we're going to develop prevention strategies based on these events, we need to do a better job of capturing more of these events through some type of formal system so we can use them to develop our programs. So I'm going to just give you a little background on patient satisfaction scores, and Ashley talked about the patient satisfaction survey. 25% of patients at these hospitals receive a satisfaction survey after their discharge, and these patient satisfaction scores are tied to Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement as part of value-based purchasing. So patients who have been violent can receive a satisfaction survey. So the nursing staff are aware of this. They know. And so one nurse manager provided some context. If we fought with this patient all the time because we're not giving them morphine, and then the question on the satisfaction survey says, was my pain relieved? That's tied to our satisfaction score, which is tied to value-based purchasing, which is the whole of nursing. We're all getting evaluated on that. So this has become an integral part of their job and how they behave and then how they report. So what we found is 16% of workers that are reporting into medical records, they indicated if it is something involving the patient that they are being inappropriate, I document it in the chart itself. It's totally in my notes because it could come back after the family or patient leaves. Then you have a problem. And another indicated, we just chart whatever happened, and that will be our defense later on if it comes back to us. And while this is great that they're reporting, it's not going into an occupational injury surveillance system, so we're not capturing it. And they're doing it because they're afraid. They're doing it because they're afraid they're going to get reprimanded and they're going to get in trouble. Now, when we did focus groups among the managers, we asked them, you know, is this coming back? And they said, you know, it's really rare that it's coming back on the nurse, that they're going to get in trouble on a patient satisfaction survey if a lot of is written there and this been this type of event. They said every once in a while something will happen if we feel that the nurse didn't act appropriately. However, and that's the nurse manager story, but the nurses themselves are very, very concerned about how this affects their job stability and how they're perceived. They also report quite a bit to the nurse manager or to the unit manager. I just email my nurse manager when something like this happens, or I usually send an email to my boss saying, hey, this event occurred, or I actually try to call them or whomever is in charge. And so again, there is reporting going on and the managers are learning about it, but it isn't going into a reporting system where under the occupational surveillance umbrella this is actually being captured. When I asked about the threshold for reporting, they said if it gets physical, if I felt like it was something that could happen again and again, or if it was a dangerous situation that was handled wrong. It's got to be a threatening situation. And one indicated I'd have to be beat up pretty good. And another, if they're on drugs. And this one nurse really hit it when she said, I think it's when they cross the line and each person has a threshold of what they will tolerate. I don't tolerate being people cursing or saying degrading things to me. And we heard this over and over. Somebody else's threshold was drugs. Somebody else was cursing. Someone else's if they got hit, etc. If they are hitting us on purpose, then I would report to the supervisor or to security. So why workers report? They report to document their side of the story. If the perpetrator crosses a line, but that line varies by worker. If they perceive the perpetrator intended to harm them, or if they felt scared for their personal safety. The barriers to reporting, we found that workers, if they were concerned about being blamed, they felt it was time-consuming. They thought the reporting systems were cumbersome and there were too many. They thought the policies were unclear. Some of them didn't know if there was a policy. We also found that among the nurse managers. When I was doing the focus groups, I would ask, well, where do you report? Well, they would start this discussion among them because they would be informing each other. And I was like, well, don't you know? And some didn't know, or what they knew was different. Some told their workers to put it in first report of injury. Some told them to put it into the patient safety net. So there was a lack of consistency there, which is clearly the message that they're getting from the leadership. Hospital leadership varies. And also, there was a minimal feedback after they report an event. So our findings are similar to prior studies. There was a study done where they evaluated reporting of work-type violent events in hospitals in California, and they found that there was disparate systems, different types of reporting. There's handwritten notes versus, you know, an electronic system, but nothing consistent within a hospital or across hospitals. And an earlier study found that workers were more likely to report these events to their nurse manager than to put in a formal written report. We also just learned at a recent conference, actually, the hospital where Judith is doing her work, that it is the policy for the workers to report to the nurse manager, and then the nurse manager puts the event in the system. And one of our hospital systems recommended that to me, and I thought at the beginning of the study, and I said, oh, no way. And now that I have these findings, I'm kicking myself that I said, hey, no way, because it's a great way, actually, I think, to go for this, because the nurse managers are the ones that are really getting all this information. So just to bring you back, we had 2,098 individuals, workers, who experienced at least one event. Ashley went into our system, at one of the hospital systems. It was three hospitals over 6 years, and found 484 events. Okay, so that's half of our study hospitals. So we had, if you break that in half, it's 484 events in 6 years. Doesn't equal 1,000 events in 1 year. So we are just getting the very tip of the iceberg, or the tip of the triangle, when we think about our injury prevention triangle of our events. And so we really, when we talk about underreporting, it really is astounding what we're seeing. And we can't just blame our surveillance systems for this workers' compensation and OSHA log, the criteria for making it in for an event to make it into those systems are high, and they don't necessarily fit a workplace violence event because not all, a lot of events don't result in a physical injury. So our next steps, with regard to maybe improving the reporting into these existing systems, is to make sure that there's strong institutional support and policy that explicitly states where workers should report. So often hospitals will meet the letter of the law and they will have a workplace violence prevention policy, but in that policy there's nothing in there about reporting. And then also we asked workers what they recommended. They wanted a reporting system that was computerized, it was short, no longer than one page, that there's check boxes. They don't want to have to write anything. They want to be able to go through and check boxes. Judith developed this back in 1998. It was a paper form back then, so we need to computerize this. And that they also wanted something, if they went into the medical record, that they could then go right to their employee injury reporting, or that somehow that those systems were connected. And I think in the future we should be able to do that. So then they're only reporting in one place. I also feel like we kind of need to turn occupational injury surveillance on its ear. We always report into the systems that we have, and I think with today's technology, we need to take advantage of that. We need to do intermittent surveillance surveys. We need to go in and do more blitz, and not we, us, but we need to teach our nurse managers and our hospital leaders how to do this, that they aren't just relying on these existing passive, somewhat passive systems. We need to use our technology and use handheld devices and put these types of forms right on a handheld. We're about ready to do a pilot test at one of the hospitals to have the nurse managers carry around an iPod with the form on there. And how many times is someone coming to them in a day and given reporting something to them and having them put it into this system? And also to capitalize on the worker-manager relationship, involve the nursing managers and the unit managers, as I'm indicating, in gathering these types of data. So I will stop there and take questions. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead. Hey, I just want to commend your group on this really, really important work and you getting beyond just counting the number of incidents. I just want to make a comment based on this discussion so far. Probably many of you know that federal OSHA is now using the general duty clause.
Yes.
Great.
And when's that coming out? Is it coming out soon? Is it? It's not out yet, is it? Okay.
2015.
Okay. And will that be up on the ANA website?
Yeah.
Okay. So Jane Lipscomb, and who else authored it with you?
Matt London.
Okay.
New York State.
Great. And Matt London. Okay, this is excellent. That's wonderful. Yes.
Okay.